thank those who were helpful to me in preparing for Tisha B'Av and helping me prepare these sources. In particular, two people to mention, Rabbi Moshe Shapiro of the Yeshiva University Library, and Bracha Shulman from our office, who was very helpful in preparing these source books. Also, take a moment to acknowledge and thank our sponsors, the learning, the lamenting that we will do on the next day is Le'ilui Nishmas, Chaim Yoshio, Ben Yosef. His neshama should have an aliyah. There was a Rav in Montreal. His name was Rav Halpern. Halpern died very young. One of his children, who at the time was only 13, is now a Rebbetzin in Los Angeles, married to Rav Elazar Muskin of Young Israel Century City. And Rav Muskin shares a story of his in-laws when they were visiting his wife's grandparents in Eretz Yisrael. As it so happens, the Halpern seniors lived in the same apartment building as Rav Gorin Zatzal. This was before Rav Gorin had become the Rav Rashi of Eretz Yisrael, and at the time he was just the Rav Rashi of Tzahal. After their stay, they were ready to return to Montreal, and they had a very, very early morning cab ride, well before the time of davening Shabbos even. And as they were getting into their cab, Rav Gorin comes flying out of the apartment building and tells them, Rav Halpern, remember one thing. Don't repeat Chet HaMeraglim. Halpern looks at him and says, what are you talking about? And he responded, Halpern, no doubt you've seen many things on your vacation and your stay here in Eretz Yisrael. Not all good. But only repeat the good stuff. You're going back to Canada, only share the good. Don't repeat the Chet HaMeraglim. This is a challenge, a perennial challenge, in particular the difficult tkufa, the difficult period, which we're living in right now. Pasuk tells us, we'll read it shortly, second Pasuk in Megillas Eicha, B'choz tibkeh b'layla. She weeps bitterly in the night. V'dim'asa alechaya. The tear is on her cheek. The Pasuk being referenced is, of course, from the opening of Parshas Perek Yudalet and Parshas Shlach. The Torah tells us that after having heard the report of the Meraglim, Hatisa kol ha'eda, v'yitnu es kula kolam, v'yivku ha'am b'layla ha'u. The entire community, the congregation, raised their voice, and they wept on that night. Chazal, in a number of places, comment on these two psukim. We'll see a sampling of them now. If you take a look at the third source on your sheet, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, of all of the Mamari Chazal, this is the one, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which actually specifically makes reference to the Pasuk in Eicha, not just the Pasuk in Bamidbar. So we'll start with the Gemara in Sanhedrin. B'chosich be'balayla, the Gemara bothered by the double language of b'chosivkeh. Shnei b'chios halalu lama, says the Gemara. Why two cryings? Amarabba, Amarab Yochanan, Echad al-Mikdash Rishon, ve'echad al-Mikdash Shein. We cry twice in the Megillas Eicha, once for the first base of Mikdash, and again for the second base of Mikdash. Balayla, the pasuk continues in our Megillah. of Biscay Island. It's talking about the events of that night. What fateful night is that? Quotes the Pasuk in Bamidbar, Shlach. And the Gemara tells us on the third line, Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Oso Halayla, Leil Tisha B'Av Haya. The night the Meraglim came back to give their infamous report was the night of Tisha B'Av. There's a Chesbon, Chazal, how they figure that out, but we'll leave that. They have a Chesbon and we have a Mesorah tradition. The Meraglim returned on the eve of Tisha B'Av. Amar Lahen HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Atem B'Chisem, B'chiyah shalchinam, ani ekva lachem, b'chiyah ledoros. The words are literally easy to translate, but in context they're a little bit more mysterious. We usually think of chinam as amplifying b'chiyah. You cried for nothing. You shouldn't have cried. You should have trusted Hashem. You certainly should have trusted Yeshua and Kalev. B'chiyah shalchinam will therefore be repaid, will be punished in kind, with a b'chiyah ledoros, tears, and the implication, although not spelled out in the Gemara, is tears which are going to be, unfortunately, for good reason, and for all generations. The Gemara Maseches Taanit is perhaps more well known, on Daf Chav Tes, parallels the second part of this Gemara, but as you'll see, does not mention the b'chiyah sivka, the first part of the Shtei B'chiyos. Interesting, a parallel text comes from the Medrash on Eicha Rabbah, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Here we have different terms being used. Atem b'chisem b'chia shel tiflus. So b'chem liyos b'chem b'chia shel mamish. I'm not sure that it's a great significant difference, but perhaps it's a slight difference, and it certainly is just another adjective, another orientation for us. A b'chiyah shel tiflus, a worthless, wasted, silly, tears. And in the end, and here it's, you put the two together, there's a b'chiyah ledoros, we'll be crying for many years. But in theory, you could have read that also as b'chiyah shel chinam. So here, this medrash makes it clear that when we cry for all generations, those will be tears because of real pain. It's b'chiyah shel mamish, not b'chiyah shel chinam. Finally, another Maimar Chazal in the Sifta Zutrasav, commenting on our Pasuk in Shalach, Batisa, Kol Ha'eda, quotes the Bechia Shachinam versus Bechia Ledoros, and then in the underlying part, the Amar Mar, Batisha Ba'av, Harav Abayis Barishona, Ubishniya, makes it clear we're talking about the Korban, and then adds a new dimension to it. To our texts. Lepisha Magalgalin's Chus Alide Zakai, Bechov Alide Chayiv. We have a notion that once a person or a moment in time already has a certain orientation, either for good, as Chus, or for bad, a Chova, Magalgal, and then there's like a tone that's set and we pile on. So if it's a good tone, we pile on good things. And if it's a bad tone, Rahman al-Islam, Chova Alide Chayiv. And then, very ominously, the Medrash concludes, "Lefi shiyesh yom mizuman leparanus." Hard to know how to translate that exactly, but unfortunately, the intent is very clear. This is a day that's mizuman leparanus. It's marked on the divine calendar as a day where tragedy will take place. So if we think about all that we've seen, all these various Mamari Chazal, the different motifs and the slightly different nuances of each, I think, and perhaps this year, as I focused on these Mamari Chazal as a unit, it hit me more than other years, a comment that is made in a new book that has just been published in the last month or two, called The Lord is Righteous in All of His Ways. It's a book that was edited, and I know, worked on painstakingly for years by Rabbi J.J. Schachter, familiar to us, was just in our shul earlier this year as a scholar in residence. It's based on the thought of the Rav of Rav Soloveitchik, specifically all of the years that Rabbi Schachter was in Boston when the Rav was learning Kinos at the Maimonides school on Tisha B'Av Day, as well as other tapes and manuscripts that he used from previous years, put together and organized by theme and by Kina. Fantastic, fantastic book. Very powerful. We're familiar in the shul with many of these chidushim over the years. Rabbi Weiner used to quote them regularly. We've quoted them the last 2 years. And here, toward the beginning of the book, on page 68, quotes the Rav is saying something which, again, could be read in a vacuum and appreciated, but I think in light of the Mamre Chazal hits home even more. The Rav is speaking in first person, and he says that you should ask me what kind of fast day Tisha B'Av is. I would answer that is the fast day caused by the sin of the spies. The Churban Beis HaMikdash is only a consequence, a result of that event. What actually happened was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to change his plans. Now, the chiddush of this is its simplicity. The Rav is in essence just paraphrasing a different chazal in also Maseches Tainis. We're told of the five things that occurred on Tisha B'Av, and the first one on that list is the Meraglim. But the truth is, I think most of us don't think of Tisha B'Av that way. Most of us think of Tisha B'Av as mourning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Rav, the Churban is just a nafgamina. The real paranos, the real tragedy, was the Meraglim. All of history, world and Jewish history, would have been different if it wouldn't have been for the Meraglim. And this event was the first tragedy associated with Tisha B'Av, and it therefore precipitated the great, awesome tragedy of thousands of years later, the Churban HaBayis, as well as Galus, the exile. With all of these Mamarei Chazal, I want to paraphrase a discussion that the Rishonim and Achronim have on Chumash. Because with all of these Mamarei Chazal, if you see the bottom of this page as well as the beginning of the next page of your sources, the Mefarshim want to know, where did Chazal get this from? It's not a nice idea, that's a bad choice of words. It's an understandable, powerful, sad drasha. Where does that come from? How is it anchored in the Chumash text? And the first to ask that question already is the Ramban. The Ramban himself offers a suggestion that perhaps it comes not from any of the psukim we've seen until now, but from later on in the Perek on Pasuk Lamed Aleph, when the people are very scared and they say, you know, we'll go into Eretz Yisrael, our children will be taken as captives. And when Hashem responds, even though he forgave them, but he tells them, nevertheless, the Tapcham, Asher Martam, Levaz, those children who you said will be taken captive, yeah, they will be. They'll know the land. Says Ramban, they may know the land, Yedu, Yershu, but to inherit it in the sense of permanently, they will not. That's the Ramban's suggestion, how this whole phenomenon is hinted at in the text. If you take a look at the Torah Tamima on the top of your second sheet, the Torah Tamima also asks this question. The Torah Tamima first answers from a paper called the Torah Chaim. It says, you see on the right-hand side, the first column, the Medayei Kaloshon. Because the Pasuk says, in the beginning of the paragraph we began with, that they cried, when did the report come back from the spies? Balayla, on that night. The Mashma Halayla Hayadua, a night that was known. Mima Hu Yadua. Why was it known? Because of what would happen in the future. A very fascinating suggestion. Perhaps even predating the Meraglim, this was known. And if not predating the Meraglim, but Chazal understood when it was on the night, what other night could it be but the night that had all those other bad things that happened, such as the Churban. Tarfim himself offers a different suggestion, and he bases himself on the Medrash that Batisa, which is the opening of the Perek, is a lashon of halva, of a debt that is owed to someone, and therefore he says on the left-hand side, because of the original sin of their tears that night, hukpo b'chiyah daros b'laylahu, so Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, has a loan now that he's owed. We owe a chov, we owe a loan, a payment to Hashem for our mistake on that night. And therefore it became Hukva B'chil Doros, Churban Bayis Sheni, Rishon, etc. The Sforno, while not quoting this Maamar Chazal, or even the question of how the Chazal knew this, But the Sforno himself also superimposes this assumption into his understanding of certain psukim. So, for example, slightly before the one we read before on Perek Yudal and Pasuk Chaf Ches, Amor Aleihem, Chayanin Um Hashem, Imlo Kasher Dibartem, Baznai Kain Es Elohem. That which you were so scared of, you said would happen, that's exactly what I will do. Kain Es Elohem, says the Sforno, all these things you were scared about happening, when will it happen? Buzmanim Mischalfim, at different times. Meaning, not at one moment, not in the desert, but over the course of history, there will be various times. First Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash. There will be great tragedies. All the things you were fearful of will come to pass at various future dates in history. Both the Ramban and the Sforno allude to the fact that even though the Chumash is not explicit about this phenomenon, in other Sifrei Nach, we do have more explicit reference. So, for example, they both quote the Pasuk in Tehillim, Perek Kuf Vav, Shatim Chav Dalet through Chav Zayin, terrible things are described. V'yim Asu Ba'aretz Chemda, the people said bad things, were rebellious against, denigrated the Eretz Chemda, the beloved land, Lohiminu Pharaoh, they didn't believe, V'yir Gnu Ba'alehem, etc., V'loshamu B'kol Hashem, etc., etc., referring to the Midbar. And then finally in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Ulahapil Zaram Bagoyim Ulazarosam Barotzos. They'll be cast down, the descendants will be cast down, cast out among the nations. What is this referring to? Says Rashi on Tehillim, says the Mitzudos on Tehillim, Me'oso Shah Nigzar Lehen Churban Habayis. So there, Pasuk Tehillim speaks about denigrating Eretz Yisrael and being spread out, being exiled. Furthermore, another pasuk that's quoted by the Mefarshim, by the Mishonim, is a pasuk in the Navi Yechezkel, pasuk Perakav, pasuk Chav Gimel, where the Navi tells us, Gam ani nasasi es yadi lahem bamidbar lahapitz osam bagoyim v'zaros osam ba'aratzos. Hashem takes his hand up in an oath to scatter them among the nations and disperse them among the lands. Again, says the Mitzudos, say the other Mefarshim, this is a reference to this concept, this phenomenon of Hokbal Doros, of Chisam Shachia, punishment for all generations. What's not clear, what is very fascinating to me, is if this is all so, who knew about it? Did the generation of the Dor HaMidbar know this? Clearly knew that they were going to be punished and that they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael immediately. Did they know that there was this future torturous destiny that awaited the Klal Yisrael? Who knew? And could you imagine carrying that knowledge around? So the Sforno tells us, and others, that certainly Moshe Rabbeinu knew. Like Moshe had a comment on this coming Parsha, Parsha Yeschanan, and he's begging Hashem to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he's telling the Jewish people about how he begged Hashem when he asked if he could go in. So the Sforno says, I wanted to go in today, Shaligu Yisrael Mimeno, because if I would have gone in, there wouldn't have been a Golus. And then he repeats, Shalotiglu Mimeno Leolam, if I had gone in with you, not Yoshua, if we'd gone in directly with me, said Moshe, there would never have been a Golus. But what could I do? Ukar Nasa Yoda Lahapil Zarechem Agoyim. What a powerful Sforno, says the Sforno. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go in, but if Moshe Rabbeinu would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, there never would have been a Golus. So why didn't that happen? It's almost as if Hashem had tied his own hands. Because after all, Hashem had already sworn that there would be a Golus. And that was so powerful, and that was so unalterable, that that even made Moshe's begging and pleading for forgiveness for his own Avera impossible to be granted. He couldn't be totally forgiven, he couldn't be led into Eretz Yisrael, because the destiny had already been determined. The Jewish people would have to go into Golus. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu knew. We don't know who else knew, but somehow, the Rambam and others tell us, the Shlomo HaMelech knew. We know from Navi how happy and ecstatic Shlomo was when he built and dedicated the Beis HaMikdash. And yet the Rambam tells us there's a tradition in which Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, there had never been a Churban before. He built catacombs and tunnels underneath the Beis HaMikdash, so that one day, in anticipation of a Churban, whoever will be leader in that time, as it happens, it was Yoshiyahu, who we'll speak about in the Kinah tomorrow, he could hide certain things, including the Aron, HaBris, so that they should never become lost or taken by our enemies. Can you imagine Shlomo HaMelech putting all that effort in building a Beis HaMikdash, celebrating it, and knowing that it would only be temporary? The Radak, commenting on the parallel psukim in Divrei Hayamim, which talk about Yoshiyahu, the very psukim that the Kina will reference tomorrow, about the great tshuva that Yoshiyahu did himself and the tshuva movement that he led in Klal Yisrael then, when he found, he was doing renovations on the Beis HaMikdash, he found the Aron, and it says that he put it back, but Chazal understand, and Radak quotes, it wasn't put back where it used to be, it was Tziva Lignos as Aron. Apparently, even then, Yoshiyahu knew that it wouldn't be a permanent rectification, even the tshuva movement he was leading would end up being for naught. Two final thoughts as we prepare for Eicha. The Netziv has a theory, literally a theory, because it runs through much of Netziv's commentary on Bamidbar, and even a little bit in Sefer Dvarim. He makes the assumption that the essential chait of the Meraglim was that they, at the time the Jewish people were living in miraculous existence, Hashchacha Nisis, and they didn't want it. They wanted a more natural existence, Hashchacha Tivis. If that was the case, says the Netziv, the Pasuk says, Ulam Chayani Gemali Tvod Hashem Es Kol Haaretz, that the honor of Hashem will fill the whole world. Says in the Siddh, how is the honor of Hashem filled? How does the honor of Hashem fill the world? Because the Jewish people are in Golus. There's a silver lining to Golus, says in the Siddh. By the Jewish people being dispersed throughout the world, Kvod Hashem is also spread out. Of course, that begs the obvious question. What if they hadn't sinned? The goal of the world is to fill it with Hashem's Kavod, which is fulfilled through the Jewish people being in exile. What if they'd never been in exile? And the Tziv says if they had stayed on that supernatural plane, then anything that would have happened to them, even in Eretz Yisrael, would have had reverberations and echoes throughout the world. After all, as we know, they were small, not so small, but a ragtag bunch of slaves leaving Egypt. And the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf was heard, Chazal tell us, throughout the world, everyone knew about it. So when you're on that level of a supernatural hashkafa, everyone knows about what's going on. So that could have happened. We could have had the same goal of Kavod Shemayim, but we lost it with our mistake. We decided we wanted something less, Hashkacha Tivis, and therefore we need to be scattered throughout the world in order to bring Kavod Shemayim. This is a deeper understanding of the Chait, and why it is a punishment that has such impact, not just limited to what happens in Eretz Yisrael, but as we speak about on the Kinos, all the great Tzaras ultimately go back to Tisha B'Av, many actually happened this time of year, and even those that didn't. But it also provides us with a positive goal, a way, as we so often have in Yehadus, a way of turning a negative into a positive, of channeling great sorrow to great accomplishment. And in that vein, let us conclude by seeing a short comment, but powerful, quoted by the Slonim Rebbe Zatzal in his Nesivo Shalom. He quotes a Hasidic tradition that when Bas Paro saw Moshe Rabbeinu crying in the Nile, and she said, I know that this is Yalda HaYibrim. So of course the simple understanding is, of course it was a Jewish child, who else would put a child in a river? But the Hasidic approach that he quotes is that Mibichiyoso Hikirosh Yehudi, the type of crying he did gave it away. Kiraasa Shavocha Bechi Shal Tikva Lo Bechi Shal Yeyush. He was crying tears of hope and not tears of despair. So as the son of a Rebbe, there's two types of tears. In Jews, only cry, Bechi Shel Tikva, tears of hope. If we can't cry tears of hope, we don't cry at all. He says in the left-hand column, Ken Yedua Yehudim B'Yimei HaShoah, Afilo Lukkos V'Yehulim V'Yos Matzav HaMeyesh. They were really so forlorn in the time of the Holocaust, they couldn't even cry. Because when a Jew cries, it's not out of despair. It's out of hope for a better future. U'kasher Yehudi Bocha Churban Beis HaMikdash, Hareze Bechia Shel Tikva. When we cry over the Churban, when we have Bechia L'Doros, a Bechia Shel Mamish, as bad as it is, as painful as it is, it's a Bechia Shel Tikva. There are tears of hope. Shmerov Gaguav, Ruchukosol, the Beis HaMikdash, Uboche. We're crying because we have such a great desire for that better future. We're crying tears of hope that the pain of today should turn into a better tomorrow. The Chet HaMeraglim cast a long shadow on Jewish history. We are, in a very real sense, today and until Bias Goel, in the shadow of tears, in the shadow of the tears that have been cast by that fateful evening, Ba'laila, Ha'laila, Oso Ha'laila, Laila Hayadua, the tears of that night cast a long shadow. But if that is the case, if we are to be in a shadow of tears, what we take from this is that we need to make it positive, not only to see the silver linings, but to make sure that it's a bechia shel tikva. We need to learn from mistakes. We need to realize that tears have an impact. Our priorities, our values are determined by what do we cry over. The kleinigkeit, the little things in life. And when major, major cataclysmic events occur, such as some of the tragedies going on in Eretz Yisrael now, do we cry? All of us cry over something. The question is, what rises to the level of importance in our lives that make us cry? First, the most basic thing the Meraglim can teach us is we're judged by what we cry over. So we do cry, and we should cry, for the tragedies of the past, for the tragedies currently, the tsaras currently going on in Eretz Yisrael. But let's make sure that as Jews have done throughout history, these tears are tears of hope. Bechi Shel Tikva. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond to those tears with love, with kindness, and with mercy.